Listen now to the story of Juan Melendez, 24th person released off of Florida's death row.
Fui la víctima inocente de un proceso judicial que un momento crucial me sentenciaron a muerte. How many of you understood what I just said? For the ones that didn't, just imagine yourself in a courtroom and you don't know the language, you don't know the process. They never gave me an interpreter. If I say 5 words in English, 3 of them would have been cuss words. That's the type of English I know. My name is Juan Roberto Melendez. I born in Brooklyn, New York, and I grew up in the island of Puerto Rico. That's where I was raised at. They took me back home in the late 50s and all the decade of the 60s I spent in the island. And as I stand up in here, I will tell you the worst mistake I ever made in my life, and I still regret it today. I guess I'm gonna have to take it to the grave. It's when I quit school. When I stopped listening to my mother, and I started listening to the teachers, and I started listening to these old people, they're always giving me good advice, and it went to one ear to another one. I did not pay attention. That's when everything went down the drain. I grew up a man before time. I was cutting cane when I was 14 years old. I still work the land today. I'm 52. Today, in Puerto Rico, I go and I got a friend that owns 50 acres of plantains, the big banana, and he lets me run it. So I get all the kids that are in the streets in my neighborhood that quit school and they're on drugs and always staying in trouble. I pick them up and I take them to the field and I teach them how to work the land the old-fashioned way, the way my grandparents taught me, using the old tools, not using pesticides, everything organic. And then I tell them my story in hope they can walk a straight arrow. In 1970, I decided to leave the island. I was barely 18 years old. I was hanging out with older people that was doing drugs and doing things that should not be doing. So I was getting in that environment. So when I go leave the island to go and become a migrant worker, a fruit picker, I went to the state of Delaware in Dover. And from there, after we finished the fruit in there, I went to Florida. And I'm telling you, my friends, I have walked very uncertain roads in my life. I have walked very dangerous roads in my life. But I never thought, never imagined that one day I will be convicted and sent to die for a crime I did not commit. This odyssey started in May the 2nd, 1984. I had to leave Florida early that year because the citrus fruit was hit with a frost and the fruit just fell down, the grapefruit and oranges. And all we had to do is pick it up and the season finished too early. So I moved from Florida, the south, all the way to north in the state of Pennsylvania in a little town called Mechanicsburg, which I knew a farmer that would hire me, give me a job, pruning trees, getting it ready, the apples and the peaches getting ready for the next harvest. So on May the 2nd, 1984, on a Monday, we was eating lunch, and here come a whole bunch of FBI agents and local police from that little town called Mechanicsburg. And they told us to hit the ground. One of my friends did not understand what the officers were saying, and they start kicking it and try to push him to the ground. I hollered in Spanish, "Hit the ground, these people mean business." So he did. Then they start calling my name, and I got up from the ground and I went further, closer to them. And then they told me to smile, to let them see my mouth, my teeth. I got a tooth missing, so I showed it to them. Then they told me to show them my left arm, and I got a tattoo, and I showed it to them. Then they say that I was the man they're looking for. I was wanted for unlawfully fly to avoid prosecution with warrant for my arrest in the state of Florida for first degree murder and armed robbery. So they took me to a federal prison. The next day they took me to in front of a magistrate and they was talking about extradition. I did not know what extradition means. So they brought me an interpreter at that time in the state of Pennsylvania to explain to me what extradition means. He told me the only thing I understand what he was saying was, you either fight it or waive it. And they told me that if you fight it, they're going to take you back anyway. So I figured I didn't do this. This has got to be somebody that looked like me. As soon as they see my ugly face in Florida, they will let me go. I was wrong. They took me back to Florida. Then they took me to a hearing. A judge read the charges to me. Charged with first degree murder, armed robbery, and they sinking the death penalty. Then they took me back to the cell. 2 weeks later, they appointed a public defender lawyer to me. I'm not O.J. Simpson. I don't have no money to hire lawyers. I didn't understand what this lawyer was saying most of the time. He used to pat me in the back and he used to tell me, don't worry about it, you going home. I did understand that going home stuff. That's why I wanted to go home. Then we start picking up the jury. We started Monday. Monday we pick jury. Tuesday we still picking jury. Monday evening we have 11 whites and 1 black, no Hispanic. Then they read the instruction to the jury, how to conduct itself in a capital murder case with a sinking the death penalty. Wednesday, that's when the evidence came in. This is the same week. This is the evidence they had against me. A police informer, what they call in the streets a snitch, claimed that I confessed the crime to him. He implicates another soldier in the crime, an African-American man that I know. He gets arrested, interrogated, and gave about 15 statements, incriminating himself in the crime. Now he wants to make a deal. Prosecutor love to make deals. So he may struck a deal with the state to testify against me. He gets his charges from first degree murderer and armed robbery dropped to assess it after the fact. When it was all over, he gets 2 years probation with 2 years he already had. Both witnesses were questionable. They had records. They made deals with the state to gain leniency in the crimes they commit. That's all evidence I had against me. No physical evidence, nothing else. There's that too in there. This is what I had in my favor for the defense. I had an alibi witness. 4 witnesses corroborating the alibi testimony. I also had witnesses testifying and saying that the police informer had a grudge against me. But I had a problem. All the witnesses that I had on my side were from the African-American race. And when black men's and black women's testify for the defense, all of a sudden they don't have no credibility. But when they testify for the state, for the prosecutor, all of a sudden the credibility is real good. Thursday, the same week, they found me guilty. Friday, the same week, they sent me to death. And the judge complained it was taking too long. When they sent me to death, my heart got full of hate. I hated the prosecutor. I hated the jurors. I hated the judge. I hated people that I don't even know. I hated that one also that pat me in the back. My trial defense lawyer, because I failed, he betrayed me. But most of all, I thought we Puerto Ricans was real macho mans. I found out different. I was scared. I was scared to die for something I did not do. So now, I'm on my way to death row, November the 2nd. Maximum security, 3-story building, high. It's cold in there. It's dark. It's all steel and concrete and metal detectors. It's infected with roaches and rats. So they throw me in a cell all by myself. And the roaches was so bad that when they bring the breakfast in and they put the tray in they take the tray and put it in a flap that you have in the door. And if you stay 5 seconds in the bunk to get your breakfast, when you get up and get it, the roaches and beat you to it. They waiting for the breakfast too. The rats, when it get cold, The rats want to get warm. So they gave us a blanket, and I covered myself from toe to head. And this rat wants to get warm, and he climbs the blanket and top of it. And I can feel it walking on top of, rolling on top of my blanket. I don't want to look, because if I look, I'm not going to be able to sleep. So I wait till the rat get real close to my face. And when it's right close to my face, I grab the blankets and I check him. And I hear that rat hit the ground, the floor. Boom, it's a big one. And I go back to sleep. Like I said, you told you before, I was real scared in there. So I arrive in there November the 2nd. November the 8th, less than a week, they secured a person. The 10th person in the state of Florida at that time when I was in there. Now I got real, real scared. See, I did not know the language. Did not know the process. So I'm thinking, they're killing people here every week. How long is going to be for them to come and take me? So I know how to box. And I know all these sort of exercises where you can keep your muscles flexible. And you can swing your arms and hit and throw punches. So now I'm thinking, I don't want to walk to that chair. If they come over here to get me, I might as well fight them and let them kill me right here. I'm scared of electricity anyway. So this is the thought that's running through my head. And I immediately took the sheets of my bunk and I tore them up. And I make little ropes. And I tied the bar doors. The bar doors slide like this. So I tied all these in with little ropes that I made out of the sheets. And when they push the button in the control room, the door is moving nowhere. So I'm thinking, this will give me time to warm up and fight these people to death. Because that's all I had in my mind. So it's around count time. And I've decided to do some exercise. I'm trying to get muscles coming out of my eyebrows. Because I'm trying to scare these people. I'm trying to intimidate them. But all the time, I'm the one scared. I'm the one intimidated. So here I am doing my push-ups. Here comes the officer counter. And he sees the bars, the doors all tied up. And he tells me, what the hell you got the damn doors tied up, Melendez? And I did not know English, but I knew how to curse. So I remind him of his mother all the way down. Then the rest of the condemned men, they get in the argument. And to my surprise, it was against me. They told me I was wrong. And I told them the best way I could. You mean to tell me they're killing people here every week and we ain't doing nothing? We're supposed to fight these people. We're supposed to burn this place down. We Puerto Ricans don't go out like that. We fight to the end. They still told me I was a damn fool. And then they told me that I didn't know how to write. I did not know how to read. I did not know how to speak English. And then they told me the most beautiful thing I could hear at that time. They told me, we're going to teach you how to write, how to read, and how to speak English. Because all you do is nag and nag and cuss people out, claiming that you're innocent. You're not supposed to fight a case like that. You need to learn. The worst of the worst. The most desirable people in the world. The one the prosecutor called monsters. The one they want to see executed. Taught this Puerto Rican how to write, how to read, how to speak English. It's rusty, but it helped me survive in there. And I hope it helped me tell you this sad story. I spent 17 years, 8 months, and 1 day in death row for a crime I did not commit. And it was hell. I can literally say that my loved ones and I was mentally tortured for all that time. After 10 years, I got tired of it. I wanted out. Didn't want to be there no more. And the only way out, you have to commit suicide. So now I'm thinking, I don't want to be there no more. I will tell you how they do it. They got what they call a runner. A runner is a person that's doing time and population. He's an inmate that's not condemned to death. They get him out of there to do work. The guards, they don't like to work. The only thing they do is watch and give you a hard time when they can. These runners supply us with the food, with the mop, with the broom, with the toothpaste, with the toothbrush, the toilet paper, and none of them no good. This runner also can supply you with a tool that you can kill yourself with, and he knows it. Perhaps he think that the 4 stamps that you can give him to write his pen pals is more important than your life. Perhaps he think that cigarette tobacco that you roll in paper is more important than your life. Or perhaps he think he's doing you a favor by supplying you this tool because he also know you want out of there. You want out of that miserable life. There's no life in there, it's hell. And perhaps he think he can help you with that. The tool is simple. It's a garbage plastic bag. You take that garbage plastic bag, you twist it all up, you make a rope, you put a noose. You put the noose in your neck, you hang the other part in the bars. You throw yourself down. You're dead, but you're free. That's what the demons used to tell me. Why? Why you got to take this? You're supposed to be a Puerto Rican man, a real macho man. Don't give him that satisfaction. Do it yourself. You say you didn't do it. You think they care? They're going to kill you anyway. This is the thoughts that's running to my head. So now, I never seen my friends commit suicide because I cannot see through the walls. But I see when they wheel the body out. I don't want to look. But something in the back of my head tells me, go look at your friend for the last time. So I grab that mirror. And I stretch my arms to the bars, and I look when they wheel the body out. They never take the damn noose out of the neck. And all you see is a blue face that don't look like your friend. So now, I want to do the same thing he do. I want that rope. I want that garbage bag. I want the runner to bring it to me. And he did. So I take that garbage bag and I twist it all up and I make a rope. And I put a noose in it. And I look at it. Then I look at the bunk. And I say to myself, I better lay down and think about this a little more further. And I did. And when I lay down, I fall in a deep sleep. And I start dreaming like I was a child again. Do the things I used to do when I was a child. The happy things. The happy times. I grew up in Puerto Rico. I have a mountain on the side, and if I walk 6 minutes to the south, I find myself in the most beautiful beach in the world, at least to me. So here I am in the Caribbean Sea swimming like I used to do when I used to be a little kid, having fun. The day is bright. The water is warm. The palm trees look so good, and I'm so happy in this dream. So, so happy. And all of a sudden, I see something that I never seen before. 4 dolphins coming my way. 2 get in one side, 2 get in the other side. And they start jumping back and forth and flipping like dolphins do, playing with me. I'm having a ball in this dream. I'm so happy. Then I look to the shore, and I see old lady smiling, waving her arms, real happy, happy because I'm happy. That was my mother. And then I wake up. When I wake up, I grab the rope and I look at it. And I say to myself, I don't want to die. And I take the rope and I flush it in the toilet. But my friends, it was lots of dreams. Lots of dreams. Every time I got depressed, every time I went out of there, Every time I wanted to commit suicide, our Creator sent me a dream, a beautiful dream. And I took all them dreams as signs of hope that one day I will be free. Like God is telling me, hang in there. I know you didn't do it, but you got to hang in there. I control the time. You get out when I say you get out. The truth is, it took 17 years, 8 months, and one day to also change the man. The road is a hell of a place. The conditions is getting worse and worse. They love to use logic. You're never going to get the best medication if you're sick. Why? Why give you the best medication when the government can sign you dead one the next day and you're gone? Let's give it to somebody else. For you to understand the type of people that work in there, that operate these places, these evil places. I have to tell you another sad story. We go to the yard 4 hours a week. 2 hours on a Monday, 2 hours on a Wednesday. If it's not raining. They got a word today that it still, when I hear it, piss me up. Inclement weather. When they see a little cloud. Inclement weather today. No yard. But this day we did went. So we go to the yard. One of my friends went with me. One of the one that was trying real hard so I can learn how to read and write and speak. An African-American man, a black man, I call him brothers. So here we all in the yard. Some of them play basketball. Some of them lift weights. Some of them play volleyball. I lift weights because I can burn strange steam and rest a little bit better when I go back inside. But my friend was playing basketball, this black man, this brother. And all of a sudden, he falls to the ground. And I go and see him. I stop lifting weights to see what's wrong with my friend. And I noticed that white foam was coming out of his mouth and nose. So I assume it was a heart attack. So we tell the officers in the gate, you got a man down in here. He need medical attention. So they took the time, but they call to the clinic. And here comes this nurse, a bigger white man with no medical bag. They separate us all apart so he can get inside the yard. And they brought the machine guns out so nobody can get too close to him. He had no medical bag, but he had something in his mouth. About a half a pound of chewing tobacco, and you can see that black stuff that's running to his side. And every once in a while, he spits. It's what you call down south. I don't know how they call him over here. But down south, they call him rednecks. So he's inside the yard. And he looks at my friend in the ground. And now from the distance, I tell him, hey, he's not breathing. He need air. And he spits and he say, I got to go back to the clinic to get an oxygen tank. And he left. And I'm telling you, my friend, he's taking his time. And my friend is dying. So he comes back with his oxygen tank. Back inside the yard again. Put the oxygen tank in my friend's mouth. But the air is going to the side because the oxygen tank is broken. He's not getting no air. And he's running out of time, my friend. So I tell him from a distance, you got to do mouth-to-mouth, CPR. And to tell one of them to do mouth-to-mouth to a black man that's dying in the floor, you're wasting your time. So he looks up. Then he looks down and he spits. And he made a statement using these two words. The N and the M. And I'm not going to put my mouth in there. I told him, you don't have to. Let me do it. Let's do the counting. And he agreed. I'm so glad he agreed. I'm trying to save my friend. So I take my t-shirt off. And I walked over to the man. And I wiped my friend's mouth and nose to take that white foam out of there. And he started counting. the nurse. 1, 2, 3, and I blow air. 1, 2, 3, and I blow air. 1, 2, 3, and I blow air. My friend opened his eyes. And I'm so happy because he opened his eyes. I believe he's going to make it. And then his eyes rolled back. And he made a frown with his face and mouth that I can see, still see it now. It never left me. And then he breathed real hard and air came out. I think that was his soul that left him because he died right in my arms. So now I'm mad with this nurse and I want to fight. And when I was feeling about to swing under the nurse, the rest of the condemned came and grabbed me and told me, Puerto Rican Johnny, that's not the way. We got other ways to resolve this. Don't get in no more trouble. You already are. I still go to confinement for 90 days for disrespecting a member of the staff, whatever that means. And I learned a lesson. I learned that I had to take care of myself physically and mentally. I learned that I have to grab something to lean on more powerful than the system. And the only thing I can figure out was our Creator, God. The truth is, in there, some of the condemned men turn to Muslim religion and they praise Allah and they're doing good. Some of them go to Buddha. I don't know what they praise. But the ones that doing it, they're doing good. Some of them turn to Christianity. That's the one I took. My mom is Catholic to the bones. She taught me about Virgin Mary, about Jesus, about the Holy Spirit, about God. So I grabbed that because that's what my mama taught me. And I start studying the Bible more. And I start having more faith and hope that God will one day will get me out of there. The person that died in my arms, the state of Florida, let him die like a dog in the yard. He wins a new trial after his death. But the state of Florida let him die in there like a dog. Deny him the right to prove he's innocent. But enough of sad stories. Let me tell you how I got out of there. From the jump, I will tell you, I was not saved by the system. The system was trying to kill me for all them years. I was saved in spite of the system. I was saved by the grace of God, by miracles. One of my attorneys came to see me and told me, Johnny, I can't take this no more. I got to leave your case. I ain't lost 5 clients. You know them. They're your friends. And when I say she lost 5 clients, I mean 5 clients got executed. Friends is mine that taught me how to read and write. She tells me, I can barely lose you. I know you're innocent. But I can't do this job no more. But I'm going to talk to the agency and tell the agency to hire the three best lawyers that we have in the agency and the best investigator. I finally got the dream team. So now, here comes one of my lawyers and tells me, Johnny, you have lost too many appeals. And when you lose appeal, you're getting closer and closer to death. And he tells me, if we lose this appeal, you're lucky if you live 3 years. And I say, no, you're wrong. If I lose this appeal, I'll be lucky if I live a year and a half. You know who's the government in Florida? Jeb Bush, and the Bushes believe in killing. So now, he decided to send the investigator out so he can get the files from my trial attorney, the one that used to pat me in the back. And the first murder occurred. My trial attorney became a judge. Her name is Honorable Barbara Fletcher. So going back to the story when my lawyer sent the investigator to get the files. So he see my trial lawyer who became a judge. He say, I became a judge now. I move everything out of the old office to my new office. But it's a box in there with the name Melendez in it. You can go and take it. It's in the old office when I used to do defense work. So she goes to get this box. She pull it out, look inside, and a tape cassette fell to the floor. She take the box back to the car and come back and get this tape cassette. She take that tape cassette to the office and play it. Guess what? The confession of the real killer was in that tape cassette. And my trial attorney had it a month before trial. This opened a can of worms. And it falls in the hand of a person that wants to do the right thing. She wanted to look at the entire case. See the problem I had all the time. They're looking at the case bit by bit, piece by piece. And this judge, this court of judge, wanted to do the right thing and want to know everything about the case. She wanted to take the case as a whole. So she immediately went and filed a court order to the prosecutor's office and demand that he turn in his files. And he did. Guess what? He also had the tape confession of the real killer 1 month before trial. He also had 16 documents that corroborated the tape confession of the real killer. He never turned in to trial defense lawyer, creating what they call in the legal world a Brady Rule violation, withholding exculpatory evidence, prosecutor misconduct. By that time, I got 20 witnesses that don't even know that testify in an eventuality hearing, saying that the man that confessed and this and that take cassette is the man that also confessed to us is the real killer, including the wife of the real killer that say that he came to the house with jewelry and gave some of the jewelry. She pointed in the pawn shop to obtain money to pay the light bills. He confessed the crime to her. The real killer's sister came further with tears in her eyes and say that in the backyard of her mama house, he was crying and confessed the crime to her. And the girlfriend of the real killer, with tears in her eyes, came and testified that he came to the house with his clothes full of blood and ordered her to burn the clothes and ordered her to give him new clothes and confess the crime to him too. Law enforcement office testified. Criminal lawyers testified. In the end, they found even physical evidence against this man. So this judge wrote a 72-page opinion with all this information and ordered a new trial and chastised the way the prosecutor handled the case, chastised the way law enforcement investigated the case, and chastised the man that used to pat me in the back, my trial attorney, for the way he handled the case. Ordered a new trial and told them that the case was terrible damage, that everything indicates you have an innocent man in death row. The prosecutor decided not to process the case, drop it, dismiss it, and that's why I'm here. And I thank God talking to you people now. I will tell you the day of my release, I did not know. They came to my cell and told me that I had a photo call out. So I had to go through all the process they do. You never in front of an office without handcuffs. And they slap the handcuff from the inside. You get the clothes that you're wearing to him, he searches. Then they do a corporal search and they want to see everything. Very humiliated. Then you turn around and he throw the clothes back to you. You put it on. Then you turn around, he slap the handcuffs. Then he opened the door. When he opened the door, they start putting changes on you, shackles, chain on the waist, chain on the neck, a black box with a handcuff inside. They twist your arms like this, and the black box go here. And you walk like a penguin, dragging your change. So here I am for a photo call out. And then all of a sudden I see a whole bunch of guards with white shirt come and tower me. And I'm thinking they signed my dead one. Because I don't trust these people. I was very paranoid in there. So when they come, They tell me that I'm supposed to go to the information office. I don't know what that was. I'm locked up in a cell for all them years. So I still don't move. And then the captain of the prison made this mistake and pat me in the back and told me to move. I looked at him. I said to myself, I'm doomed in here. He reminded me I'm a travel attorney. So then an officer spoke in Spanish and told me, Melendez, go to the information office. You probably got good news. And I believed him, and I left with them. They set me down in a chair in front of a desk. And behind the desk is a lady working, sitting down working with computers. And I can hear my name popping every once in a while. Then she started asking these weird questions. What's your social security number? And I tell her. But I'm thinking, why she want to know my social security number? Then she asked me another question. What kind of job you like to do? What kind of job you have? If you live close to the job, some things like that. And I gave him a weird look, and she got up and put her hands in the desk and looked straight at my eyes and told me, you don't understand what's going on in here, right? In it. I say, lady, I don't have the slightest idea. I live across the streets. I've been in there for almost 18 years. I'm in death row. They don't have no jobs in death row. She say, we fixing your paperwork because we finna release you today. I don't know if all you watch cartoons and you see this cartoon hit the other one with a hammer. And you see them star just running around his head. But he's smiling. That's how I was. In a state of shock, but smiling. And still smiling today. So now I'm going my way out. So all the officers, they start acting different toward me. They offer me sandwiches. They offer me sodas. They never did that before. And another thing they did was, they start calling me Mr. Melendez. I kind of like that. So now they take me upstairs. And by this time, all the condemned men know that I'm going to be out. And then they came to open the doors. Like I told you before, you never in front of an officer without the handcuffs. So here come three officers, and they open the door right away, and they go inside. I turn around so they can put the handcuffs on. It's a custom I've been doing for almost 18 years. So I just turn around, and when one of the officers was finished slap the handcuffs, the captain of the prison told him, no, don't put no handcuffs on Mr. Melendez tonight. Melendez walks out of here without the handcuffs. Melendez is a free man. That made me feel good too. So I look at the man in the last cell. I'm next to last. And I got to walk a long hallway. And I see tears running down his cheeks. And he's telling me, hey, be good. Don't forget about us. But I cannot say nothing. I'm in a state of shock. I'm thinking I'm dreaming. I think it's a dream. Plus, I was happy, but part of me was sad. Because I know the destiny they're facing. And I don't want them to die. So when I go past every cell, they start telling me to do good, don't get in no trouble, write them. And then all of a sudden, they start clapping their hands. And when they start clapping their hands, it spread like fire. All the death row facility was clapping their hands, and the officer was complaining, telling them to be quiet. But they still clapped their hands all the way to our left, all the way to I can hear no more. When I go out, it may be news. So here comes the reporters. And they don't know how to ask some silly questions. They ask me how I feel. How you supposed to feel? Happy. Then they ask me what I wanted to do, what I wanted to see. I did not tell them I want to go to Disney World. I told them that I wanted to see the moon. I wanted to see the stars. I wanted to hold a baby in my arms. I wanted to climb a tree. I wanted to step on grass. I wanted to step on dirt. And of course, I told them, I wanted to talk to some beautiful women. And the reporter that was making all the questions, She was ugly. But anyway, what I'm trying to tell you is that I miss the things that we take for granted. And there, I learned to love all God's creations. I'm a type of man that I can stand up on a rock and look at the mountains for hours and hours and hours and don't get bored. And I do not understand the people in the outside today when they tell me they're boring. And I tell them, with all these beautiful things that's around us, and you tell me you're boring? I also learn how to love, how to forgive, and how to have compassion. I learned that in there. And I guess that's why our Creator opened the door for me. I want to tell you this last thing. I'm still dreaming today. I dream and I pray to God that He give me the strength to plant all the seeds I can to get this death penalty abolished. And I pray and I tell Him, please, do it in my time. But this dream cannot come true without all your help. You need to get involved in some type of organization that is against the death penalty, like the one they got in here, Arizona Death Penalty Forum, or others. It's so many. And unite, we can get rid of this law. It do too much collateral damage on both sides. It don't resolve nothing. So I leave you with that thought. God bless you all, and peace and love to you all.